me in studio today is our president, CEO of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce, Bettina Hannigan. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's wintertime, and sort of a lot of things go on. We just had the inauguration, but we had the What am I trying to say?
Installation
of some folks here, especially in the city. But then coming up, we've got some new Congress stuff going on. We've got stuff in the state that's happening. But it's a time when winter businesses seem to have a struggle, especially in small rural counties and rural areas like this.
Absolutely.
So once again, we're doing the Wine and Chowder Festival, which we used to do in October.
Right.
But this has been kind of a boom for the month of February.
Definitely, it is. It's a three-day weekend, and it was a three-day weekend in October, too. It was Indigenous Peoples Weekend, or Columbus Day weekend. And so it was a three-day weekend, but we moved it to President's Weekend in February. And it's a three-day event. It starts Friday, Saturday, and goes to Sunday. This year, we're changing. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you can find 30-something glass floats hidden in businesses all over town. And then Saturday and Sunday will be wine tasting in different locations around Old Town and downtown area. And then Sunday afternoon will be the chowder tasting. And that's going to be held this year at the Playhouse, which is above the green room there off of Laurel.
Was the switching to 2 days wine like because of popular feedback? What was the impetus for?
I think that people really wanted to have more wine tasting. One day wasn't enough. You know, I think we have between the FEC's event and our event, we usually have between 12 and 15 wineries.
And that's one person having 12 wine
tasting.
Right,
that's
could a
lot.
A bit too much.
So yeah, so this will make it nice that you can actually do it 2 days. So you buy the wristband. We'll do wristbands that can stand a shower. So you'll get your wristband on Saturday or Sunday. You can do either or both. And then you can do wine tasting both days. And then the chowder tasting will be in the Playhouse. And we're hoping to have 6 or 7 different chowders inside the Playhouse so people can go there, try the chowders, you turn in your token, and you'll vote for what your favorite chowder is. And we may have some chowder at locations outside of the Playhouse, but we're not sure about that yet. Right now, we're trying to keep everybody inside the Playhouse.
It'd be easier. Like you said, we don't have traffic jams in front of businesses.
Well, and it's
like
hard.
That.
I was talking to Scott at Beachcomber, and you know, it's hard to have people standing in line next to people who are sitting at table eating their food. You know, and you're sitting there eating your food and people are looking at your food and looking at you eat while they're standing in line. So I think it'll just be a little bit better to have a place where you can go. You're going to stand in line. You're going to try the different chowders. And it's going to be a more positive experience for the taster and the tasty.
Do you feel this will be will bring out some more participants in it?
Because I hope so. I hope so. And I think it'll keep people overnighting more. Because the wine will be both days. So the goal for the chamber is for our tourism events is to put heads in beds and to keep people staying overnight so that they're staying in our hotels, they're eating in our restaurants, they're shopping in our stores. And the Wine and Chowder Trail, it's actually the Wine, Chowder, and Glass Float Trail is the official name of the event. It's a great event because it's a three-day event. So it does really meet those different checks. It checks those boxes of having people stay overnight and shop and get around town. And it's really a lot of fun.
Now, I know that the chamber is not Maybe I should ask this first. Chamber's not directly involved with the Winter Music Festival.
We are involved in the marketing and the promotion of the Winter Music Festival.
And that's our first thing that's coming up at the end of
this
month.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And that's, I think, almost sold out already.
Yeah, there's
some tickets left. So I didn't say we were sold out. I said almost sold out.
I think that Rachel said that the multi-day passes were pretty much sold out.
Which is
still
great.
Some single-day tickets.
Yeah, that event, they've really ramped that up. And I think that's become so popular.
Yeah, and the music's been so good. So it's why people come.
Yeah,
for that.
Exactly.
We do get a lot of people that come from Eugene and outside areas, don't we?
I was really surprised, and they've been collecting the data on that. And they come from Portland and San Francisco and Seattle, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then, you know, the people who come from Eugene are great. It's a day trip for them. They can come over, and they're wonderful. And we love our Eugene visitors. But the people who come from Portland and San Francisco and Seattle spend a lot more money.
Right. Yeah, they spend more time.
So we kind of, you know, you look at what they spend per. And they track this information through credit cards. So they can tell by where the credit card companies provide. It's generic data. You know, it doesn't say, but Bettina Hannigan, you know, spent X amount of money at the Brighton store in Newport Beach last week, which I did. But but it says that, you know, somebody from Florence, Oregon spent X amount of money at the Brighton store in Newport Beach.
Right.
So that kind of data is helpful with the tourism for where we're spending our marketing so that we are targeting the customer that's going to come and really support our community the best.
Now, I don't know if we talked about this on the air before, but I remember it was either in a meeting or a conversation we had about Monday being a very strong tourism day here on the coast.
It is. It's a bigger spend day, and a lot of businesses don't really leverage that. I don't know why.
You have empirical data that from the
Absolutely.
State.
We do. We actually have it from Travelling County.
Yeah.
And we've harvested this credit card information and the cellular data information, so we know where people are coming from, how long they're here, and how much they're spending.
And so businesses that think, well, I'll close on Monday because it's a slow day of the week. They could take advantage of it.
And it may be a slow day for them.
Right.
You know, because a lot of businesses are really good at tracking their revenue. So maybe historically it hasn't been that great of a day. So maybe rather than saying, okay, I'm just going to go with the old data, maybe it's time to be a little creative and say, okay, well, Bettina, and the data shows that this is coming, the people are coming. How do I get those people to come into my store while they're still here and still spending?
Now, I'm sure we will talk more about this in the months to come, but just recently you finished up the design and the logo and the theme for Rhododendron Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I mean, you blink and it's going to be here.
Oh, my gosh. We're 5 weeks away from Wine and Chowder.
Yeah.
And we're just a few months away from Roadie Days. We're already working on vendors and the car show. It sounds like we have a home, like the Roadie Cruisers are going to be partnering with Ross Kroner again and putting the car show on, the show and shine. So that is the best news for Roadie Days that I've heard in a long time.
I mean, just getting Ross back on board again. I know
he's smart.
He's been so like, well, I'm kind of, you know, I want to be done, but he still steps in.
He's amazing. And he's got his magic book of everything is so organized and it's so, you know, it's so ready to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited that the Roadie Cruisers have picked this up, and that's a big part of Roadie Days. And doing it over at the school, at the middle school and the parking lot has just really blown that whole car show up. And I think people really like having the diversity out there, you know, the different types of cars. You know, you've got the works in progress and the rat cars and the you know, the European cars and the American cars and all of that kind of thing.
And it really makes sense that the Roadie Cruisers take, because they were a large portion of the volunteers that did it with Rods and Roadies. I mean, they were the people who were behind the scenes doing all the work. So it makes sense that they would then say, well, might as well get some of the credit.
Yeah, I think it's great. And that way they can make their money on it, too. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's more opportunity for them to make more money on it. You know, car shows are so much labor. They're a labor of love, as you know. You know, and so when the Chamber was doing Rods and Roadies in September, one of the last years we did it, it was 400 staff hours.
Yeah.
400 staff hours to do an event that it just really didn't check all the boxes that the Chamber really needed to do to own an event. You know, we've got a staff of 2.5 people, and we really have to be very diligent in managing those resources, you know, so that we're getting the biggest bang for our buck. Yes, you know, we could do it. We could spend those 400 hours on that for doing an event the second weekend in September. But what economic impact is that going to compare to doing a 3-day event and spending the hours doing an event in February?
And September's already pretty busy.
September is busy. And that's one of the things that has changed over the years, though. September used to be considered the shoulder season. People, you know, kids went back to school and you didn't see so many travelers in September. Well, now we're seeing a lot more travelers in September. People are saying, yay, the kids are back in school. The grandparents and the double income, no kids, the people that aren't dealing with kids that are in school or they are homeschooling their kids are saying, let's get out there. It's not as crowded and it's still beautiful and let's go visit the coast. So that our shoulder season is really expanded or stretched farther into October than from being in September like it used to be.
And it's really funny because you can almost see that second or third week of October where all of a sudden weather just decides, I'm changing, and things kind of start going.
I just got back from Newport Beach yesterday, and my girlfriends are like, we want to come visit you. When should we come? I said, well, what do you want to come for? Do you want to come for the blustery coastal weather, or do you want to come for sunshine? We want to come for sunshine. Mm-hmm. I said, well, they're probably going to want to come in August or September, you know, or late July. And I said, but, you know, we love our blustery weather. No, we don't want to come for blustery. So, you know, I think maybe it's an acquired taste for a lot of us because I personally love blustery weather.
Well, it's better than the winds they're having down there this week.
Oh, Santa Ana winds and the fires.
So new legislative session is going to be coming up. And I know that Travelling County, state tourism and everything is really involved in kind of pushing legislation in that. Anything that we should know that's being worked on or anything that we should be concerned with coming up?
Well, I can honestly say that we've seen it over the years. Different city governments and county governments take a look at that TLT, that transient lodging tax, and they want it. It's money. And they say, you know, we want to take that money and we want to fill potholes with it like Ben did. And they got caught and they had to pay it back. So when this, the history behind the room tax was that back in 2005, the state of Oregon did not have a room tax on the state. Different cities had room taxes and counties had room taxes, but the state didn't. And the state said, well, I think they were like 45th in the United States for tourism revenue in the state of Oregon. So they said, we're going to start this room tax. It's going to be a 1% tax. So it finally kicked in and it started working. So fast forward to 2017, and we had gone from like a very minimal amount of tourism revenue. I think in 2017, we were somewhere around $10 billion with a B dollars in tourism revenue in the state of Oregon.
From next to nothing.
From next to nothing. And we went from being like the number 45th tourist destination into in the top 10. So that really changed a lot. You know, back then we had the spotted owl, our logging industry crashed, we saw a huge change in our agricultural industry, and Oregon really had to pivot between our manufacturing. You know, it's not easy to do business in Oregon. Oregon is not a business-friendly state. And so if you're doing business here, then you are a very strong, ambitious, and determined entrepreneur, because it's not easy to do business in Oregon. So tourism business came, and it fit a lot of the needs that the economy needed. And so over the years, then they reduced that state tax, and then they built it back up again recently in the last couple of years, and they've invested it. We're now, I think, close to $13 billion industry. We are neck and neck with agriculture as far as who brings in the biggest economic impact. So that means jobs. And people think, well, you know, what does that matter to me? I'm retired. I don't care. Well, if you'd like to go to the restaurants here in town, then thank the tourism for it, because a town of 10,000 people is not going to support 30-something restaurants, right? A town of 10,000 people is not going to support the amenities that we have here. And that a lot of that is due to our tourism. Now, I would love to say, you know, we could have some different type of economy here, of another type of industry, because tourism makes us very vulnerable. And I hear that and I get it and I know it. It's my job as the chamber. And for those of you who are listening and you don't know, the chamber is the city's contractor for tourism marketing. We're considered the DMO. And historically that was Destination Marketing Organization. Well, that's been changed to now, it's called Destination Management Organization, as many communities have kind of maxed out their tourism. And now we're looking at managing the resources that we have so that we can maintain these resources to go forward with. So, you know, managing the amount of people that are walking on the trails, and, you know, making sure people pack out what they pack in, and that they treat the locals nice, so that our residents still like to see the tourists. Many communities, the tourists have been so disrespectful that they don't want the tourism anymore. They're like, we don't care if we don't have 30 restaurants. We care. We don't want these people here. They're not nice. Mm. So our community, the chamber, has worked very hard as far as messaging our tourists and our visitors to make sure that they come here and they're grateful, they respect our culture, they respect our tribal culture, they respect our people, and that we want them to feel like a local when you're here. And if you feel like a local, then you care like a local. And that's a big part of the messaging that the chamber makes as part of our tourism marketing.
Recently in the chamber blast, you put out information about the Corporate Transparency Act. And sort of like
that's a roller coaster.
It's in limbo. It's not in limbo.
It's in limbo. It's
up
not.
And down.
Yeah.
I just got. I recently formed an LLC, and I got a letter in the mail saying, you know, you need to pay this Corporate Transparency Act tax. Like they're taxing everybody to death. So where do we sit with that right now?
Well, the state of Texas, somebody went against it. There were several different states that pushed back on it. It's non-constitutional. So they took it to the Fifth Circuit or Ninth Circuit, and they said no, and then they reversed it. And right now, as of today, you do not have to file. But it switched back and forth three times in the last 2 weeks of December.
So is that information that the chamber will keep up with?
Absolutely.
And inform everybody?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah. And so we try to be the best resource for business information in the community, and we tap into it. You know, the Chamber Blast is opened, 45% is our open rate, which is huge. It goes out to 1,100 people. It's free. Anybody can sign up for it if you want to get the Chamber Blast. It has community news. We call it the community connector. You know, it connects nonprofits. It connects our businesses. It connects resources for businesses. It connects workforce resources. So what about the on-the-job training, you know, act? Who's leveraging that? How would you like to hire an employee and have the first $5,000 come out, you know, that you don't have to pay them? So let's say, for instance, you've got a server in your restaurant and you've got a management position that's open and you'd like to train that server to be a manager. How would you leverage that on-the-job training act and then help to pay that up the increase of salary for that learning curve. So basically what the program does is it pays for somebody to get trained to do a new job. And that takes a lot of pressure off of an employer. And right now, if you can hire somebody that lives in town, you're way ahead.
Right.
Of trying to find somebody to recruit them to move here and find a house.
Yeah, that would be the hardest part.
And get connected. One of the things that I'm most proud about that the Chamber has recently done is that we've launched the young professional organization called Florence Forward. And they have their own leadership and they are just doing great. They had a meeting last night at the Beachcomber. They had a speed networking event. And it's just been a wonderful organization for people between 20 and 50 years old. So we've heard from a lot of people that work remotely, people that come here, they're busy, they're working, they don't have childcare, so they have a hard time getting out. How do you make friends if you don't go to the bar and you don't go to church? How are you going to meet people? And you're not in the PTA, right? And so I think it's a big part of the quality of life for this generation that we want and we need to be a part of our community, to be connected to our community. And that connection means making friends and developing relationships and finding people that you have something in common with. Maybe trade babysitters. Maybe, you know, you like to hike or kayak, or maybe your husband's like to go fishing and you want to go shopping. I mean, or vice versa, or kayaking or whatever it might be. So I just think it's a really wonderful resource that the Chamber has brought to our community that's going to help not only recruit workforce, but retain the workforce that we have, so that when people do come here, they find a house, they can build a life here and feel good about their life here.
So you had mentioned earlier that a lot of the things the Chamber does benefits the business community, whether they're members or whether they're not. What is a strong membership? This is your chance for an advertisement. What does a strong membership in the Chamber do for the community?
There is no other organization on the planet that does what Chambers of Commerce do. The Chamber of Commerce is an organization that represents all different types of businesses and organizations. We have, I can't even remember, I think we probably have 50 nonprofits that are part of the business. So we represent business. We're an advocate for business. We work with the Oregon State Chamber, and the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce has a PAC called Defend Small Business. And we actually have a lobbyist team that work and lobby for fair and business representation, for wages, for things like this Corporate Transparency Act. That would be done at the U.S. Chamber level. But at the state level, for instance, we've got the CAT tax at the state level. The Oregon State Chamber PAC lobbied to increase the base for that from $1 million to $5 million, so that, you know, if you're a business, for those of you who don't know, the CAT tax was a gross tax, so it wasn't on profit. So if your company did $1 million in volume and you made $0, you still paid the CAT tax. So that's going to get transferred to the customer. There's just no way that it can't. If you're dealing with like an organization like Costco that has a 10% markup, that's it. Well, that CAD tax is going to be incorporated. It goes down the line. And so there's lots of things coming out. I did hear that there's a tax that they're talking about recently that is going to put a tax on delivery services. So if you anything that's delivered, Uber, Eats, Abby's Pizza, Grubhub, Dash, UPS, Amazon, anything that's delivered in the state of Oregon, they want to put a tax on. And you know what the tax is for? To cover the roads. Because people are driving electric cars and they're not buying the gas, and so they don't have the road tax revenue. So where are they going to get that tax from? So it's
They do have an electric vehicle tax,
and though. They're doing that also. So tax them. But you know, my position on that was yes, okay. So if they need the revenue, maybe they should be targeting the DMV fees or whatever. But so they're looking for ways to fill the gap. So these are conversations that our lobbyist team deals with and takes. They come to the chamber members and they say, please give us your feedback. And if you're a chamber member or you're getting that blast, you'll get those opportunities to share your feedback with our lobbyists and with our representatives and say, you know, yes, I'm willing to pay, you know, a delivery dash tax to have less potholes. Or, you know, I think that you should go about getting that tax money a different way. So those are the type of things that the Oregon State Chamber does that our chamber leverages. So being a member of the Chamber of Commerce there's so many different assets. But I think there's two primary reasons people are a member. One is the WIFM, what's in it for me. We have a lot of people that are small businesses that join the chamber because they want to leverage our big dog resources. They want to be on our website. They want to be able to put their information in the blast, which you have to be a chamber member to do. They want to be in our directory. They want to be on our referral list. These are things that they can do. They want to have a business after hours. They want to leverage our networking. That is all things that businesses can do. That's part of the basic membership of $175 for nonprofits, $275 for profit for regular businesses.
That's a year.
A year. And that goes up to $10,000. So you can be anywhere between $275, $550, $2,500, and $10,000. And they all have different benefits. And then there's people like Three Rivers Casino, T.R. Hunter, and the FEC, who want to leverage our marketing resources more. And they also want to leverage the work that the chamber does. So their $10,000 membership goes to support the chamber itself and the work that we do. So in the history of our chamber, before me, you know, we only had one staff, St. Cal, you know, and Cal did everything. That's why we call him St. Cal. And then eventually he had, you know, a part-time person that came along and helped him a little bit with as an event coordinator. But Cal didn't have the resources or the time to be doing any advocacy work because he was so busy running around doing event work and other things. So what's happened is because of the work that we've been able to do to staff up, we have the 2.5 staff. Now I have the little bit of time that I can actually leverage our advocacy work and sit on the Oregon State Chamber. I sit on Travel Lane County Board of Directors. I sit on the Lane Workforce Partnership Board of Directors, which I'll be traveling back to D.C. with them in March to represent small rural communities on the Hill to our legislative representatives back there and say, you know, we have different needs in rural communities than what the larger communities have.
And just as a point for people who might be listening going, doing a lot of traveling, that is taken care of by them.
That's correct.
That's not something that our chamber pays for.
No, that's paid for by Lane Workforce Partnership pays for that. And then, of course, I pay for the upgrade personally. Okay. So, yes. And so that's just work that we do. And it's making an impact. And so we talked a little bit about how tourism affects us. So the chamber, our chamber wears the two hats, the tourism work that we do that provides economic development, and also the economic development and the representation, the advocacy and the resourcing for our members. And I would love to see us be less dependent on tourism. Right now, I don't know what other resources that we could bring over to the coast because of the logistics involved that would really create a manufacturing kind of an industry that would employ people with living wage jobs.
Yeah. And then retirement is another thing, too. That's a kind of a turnover business, too.
That is a turnover business to a certain extent. It's also a huge stability for our community because those people get the income without having to depend on a job. Yeah. So that provides a lot of stabilization for us community-wise and year-round.
Tina Hannigan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, Megan Mesmer from the Western Lane Emergency Operations Group.